Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Sharon W. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, May 12th, 2022. And today we are reading from the Big Book and we are at page 3, second paragraph, My Drinking Assumed More Serious Proportions, ending with Extreme Drunkenness Kept Me Out of Those Scrapes. And we're reading that one paragraph only. Today's readers are Robin P., Jody E., Lois P., and on the 12 Steps, Deb E., Linda B. on the 12 Traditions. Our newcomer greeter is Leah S., and followed by, at the end of the meeting, Leslie W. for announcements. The share ID for Wednesday, May 11th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 18,944. That is 18944. This morning's Thursday, May 12th, 7 a.m. meeting, share ID is 18,946. That is 18946. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I'll now ask Deb E. to read the 12 steps for us.
Thank you. This is Debbie, compulsive overeater, and these are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you, Deb. I will now ask Linda B. to read the 12 traditions for us.
Good morning, Sharon, and thank you. And good morning to everyone who's on the line this morning. I am Linda B. I am a recovered compulsive eater from Ontario, Canada. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. With this, I thank you for being of service, and I will pass.
Thank you, Linda. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 3, second paragraph. My drinking assumed more serious proportions, ending extreme drunkenness kept me out of those scrapes. We'll be reading that one paragraph only. And I will ask Robin P. to begin reading, please. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you, Sharon. Hi, I'm Robin P. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Costa Rica. My drinking assumed more serious proportions, continuing all day and almost every night. The remonstrances of my friends terminated in a row, and I became a lone wolf. There were many unhappy scenes in our sumptuous apartment. There had been no real infidelity, for loyalty to my wife, helped at times by extreme drunkenness, helped me out of those scrapes. Well, that's a little controversial about Bill, as I'm sure everyone knows. He probably qualified for more than one program. And he started the first one, so I don't think they got to the other ones for a while. So, and I'm so grateful to him. In terms of my own recovery, the paragraph before, I start on Broadway for 15 years, and I got abstinent. I got 12 steps right before we moved to Broadway with my first show. Excuse me. And we were playing in the park at the Delcourt right before we moved. And everything like in that paragraph, all of these famous people, all of these friends and fair weather friends, and then my eating took over. And by God's grace and mercy, I got 12 steps just in time before we moved to Broadway, because I think I would have been let go. I was so insane with the food at that point. And I had hit some very, very low bottom. And I had been very isolated. It's such a disease of isolation. And, I always think that, illness and isolation begin with I, and wellness begins with we. And the more we I have in my life, the better I do. And, using just kept me so alone. And I also kept leaving boyfriends and going to the next boyfriend and the next boyfriend and the next boyfriend. And you know, I feel really what's one of the biggest sadnesses of my life that I got to really work the steps on was abandoning, you know, a love of my life for someone else. And I'm very happily married now by God's grace. And I'm six years abstinent by God's grace, and all because of a vision for you. And, you know, but it was very tumultuous, very lonely, a lot of drama. There was so much drama in my life because of the food, and thinking that the food would hide me from the drama, and it just gave me two problems instead of one. And one last thing I just want to say, it's so much easier to stay abstinent than it is to get abstinent. And it's just, you know, in those, that mental obsession combined with the physical allergy, the mental obsession is always a lie, and recovery is always the truth. So God bless everybody with a very blessed abstinence day. I hope I said something that helped someone.
Thank you, Robin, so much for your share and for reading for us today. Okay, so I am going to go ahead and take names in a second. I just want to ask to please try to speak one at a time so I can get everybody's name down. Also tell us where you're calling from. You'll have a 3-minute share and or approximately. And I will start. So let's go. First name.
Laura L. from Arkansas.
Thank you, Laura.
Judy with an I, J, from Illinois.
Thank you, Judy.
Stephanie L. from Southern California.
Sherry KB from California.
I heard Sherry KB from California. And then another name in there.
Michelle F. from Massachusetts.
Michelle F., like Frank?
Yes.
Okay.
Did you get Stephanie L.?
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, perfect. Thank
Karen?
You.
Karen
Trevor
C.?
Trevor K. Sorry.
Karen C. And, okay. And the next, I heard a male voice, I believe.
Yeah, it's Trevor K. in Florida.
Trevor K. in Florida. I can take another. Is there someone else there? Okay, let's start with this. I've got Laura L., Judy J., Stephanie L., Sherry KB, Michelle F., Karen C., and Trevor K. So that is a wonderful lineup. Everyone, star one to mute except for Laura L.
Hi, this is Laura L. from Arkansas. May I be heard?
You can be. Go ahead, Laura.
Yes, Laura. Thank you.
Thank you. This is a great little paragraph. The things that jumped out at me the most from this reading is the remonstrances of my friends terminated in a row and I became a lone wolf. If you look at the definition of remonstrance, it's an earnest presentation of reasons for opposition or grievance. So Bill's friends, I assume, were trying to reason with him or telling him that his behavior was inappropriate, and I guess their pleas fell on deaf ears, and he just continued in his behavior and until he was alone. I guess I identify with that so much because I just came off of a 2-year relapse. I'm 61 days food sober today by the grace of God and through the fellowship of this program, and I'm very grateful for that. My drinking assumed more serious proportions, continuing all day and almost every night. That was me and the food. I just got worse and worse and worse. I didn't think that I could ever stop the relapse. I just felt like I was stuck there and that I would never get out. I guess with that, I will pass.
Thank you, Laura. Next, we have Jody J, followed by Stephanie L.
Did you call on me? This is Judy.
Yes, Judy, yes.
Oh, thank you. I was unmuting. What a powerful paragraph. I could so relate to Bill. My drinking, for me, it was my compulsive overeating, assumed more serious proportions. Volume eating, just thinking about it all day. And I was not a night eater, but before I went to bed, consuming way more food than I needed to. It was my identity. If somebody talked about a new restaurant or a new recipe, I had to try it. I had to go there. I was obsessed with compulsive overeating, so I can understand about them talking about Bill and his drinking. So can relate. I became a lone wolf because I didn't want people to see how I was eating, how I was standing at the sink and just stuffing food in my mouth before my husband came in the door, before my children came home from school. I wouldn't want anybody to see me doing that. So I became a lone wolf. I separated from people because my identity was through food. I like that Bill wrote in here his sumptuous apartment. There's his ego coming in. He just didn't say our apartment, our sumptuous apartment. Could identify with that. Things looked good on the outside. I was so so unhealthy in my thinking and my acting. Even though there had been no infidelity, and there is no infidelity in my marriage, I truly left my husband for food. That's all I thought about. Didn't want to go places because I didn't want people to see how I looked. And Bill's very last sentence, extreme drunkenness. I overate that I was sick, that I couldn't go out to eat with him because I was full. Or I would go out to eat and stuff myself so that I was extremely miserable. Please, if any of these things that I've explained how my disease progressed rings true with you, quit sitting on the fence. For me, it's hard to sit on a fence. I don't want to do that anymore. It hurts my rear end. Jump off and walk with us. We all hold hand in hand. We've all done similar things. Don't be afraid or embarrassed or feel guilty about your eating. We've been there in different ways. Just reach out. Stick around for the miracle. I don't live like that anymore. I live in freedom. And even if things come in the door that I can't control, I have my sponsor. I have my higher power. I have you fellows that I can talk it over. You guys understand how I want to eat over things. Thank you so much. I'm just so grateful to be in the program. So grateful today. And as I say, reach out. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. Just a reminder to introduce yourself and tell us where you're calling from. That'd be great. Okay, so next up we've got Stephanie L. followed by Sherry KB.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Stephanie L., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Southern California. And great share so far. I want to thank everyone for their service. And man, did my compulsive overeating assume more serious proportions, continuing all day and almost every night. And, you know, here's how it was for me. I worked in restaurants for 25 years, and, you know, I was primarily a night eater. And the way this disease progressed for me was that I would go from restaurant to restaurant and binge. And I would, I need to taste the food, you know, I need to taste this, or I need to try that, or I need to check this. And I'd go from restaurant to restaurant. And I would be eating all freaking day. And then talk about becoming a lone wolf. There's a lot of people that live in my house. And so probably one of the saddest moments was when I would go pick up all my binge foods in my car. I would have my laptop. I'd sit outside in the parking lot of Starbucks, log in to their Wi-Fi, watch Netflix, and binge in my car. And people would walk by, and I would act like they couldn't see me and talk about, you know, complete and utter loneliness. And, you know, I would do anything. And I wasn't unfaithful to my husband. I was faithful to the food, you know, the food, this compulsive overeating, you know, it's like a jealous, I don't know, I hate to say the word mistress, but it's like a jealous lover. And, you know, it was all I could think about. I was all consumed. And, you know, the amazing thing today, and like people have already talked about, is, and I could go on and on about my drunkalog, eatalog, whatever you want to call it, because I have so many more stories. You know, I was in relapse for 2 years. I gained 110 pounds, and I gained most of it in the first year. It was pretty quick. I am a gutter level eater, and I could talk about, you know, I have more of those stories. But today, I have stories of how I don't live like that anymore. And, you know, working this program and working these 12 steps has brought me to the power that I call God, this higher power that, you know, has transformed me and continues to transform me, because, you know, I'm free today. I don't want to compulsively overeat. I eat my weight in measured meals, and I get to live life. And, you know, I have a way of living that, yeah, sometimes it's not easy. Life is hard. Things happen. My character defects pop up. I don't do this perfectly, you know, but food is not an option. And, yeah, stay for the miracle, because it's amazing on the other side of this. So can't wait to hear more shares. Thank you for letting me share, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Stephanie. Next, we have Sherry KB, followed by Michelle F.
Good morning, Sharon. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered compulsive overeater. Thanks so much for your service and Team Thursday and everyone on the line. I had to think about it. Is it Thursday? Anyhow, thank you for your service. Yeah, I just like listening to everybody else and some of the things in the earlier meeting this morning. You know, my eating did take serious proportions. I kept my weight down because I was smoking cigarettes, and then once I quit, oh my God, my disease just took off. It was lying dormant for a long time between the cigarettes, the exercise, and starving and binging. And it did take serious proportions. The interesting part was for me is that I hid behind blaming other people for their addictions, such as my husband, and I never really considered mine that bad. So, boy, I ate at him. There was no intimacy when I was in the food with him or anyone else, frankly, because the food was my lover, friend, best friend, higher power, whatever you want to say. That's what happened for me, is that it reminded me of the Dr. Jekyll and Miss Hyde, because I'm very outgoing, very friendly, love people. And when I was in my disease, I isolated. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I drew the drapes, you know, took the phone off the receiver, that type of stuff, or turned off the cell phone, whatever you want to say. And I became more isolated. And, it, you know, this disease is like being kicked by a bunny rabbit. You don't get how bad it is, because I was judging someone else's disease more than my own. And, you know, I ate all the time at people. That's what I did. And even during celebrations, if I could get by enough to, you know, the celebrations would not turn out well, because I would end up face down in the food, and that was no celebration for me. That was, you know, totally in my disease. And I just, you know, thank God for the 12 steps and for my higher power, because I would still be in this paragraph living it in my life, and thank God I'm not today. And I remember going on vacations and picking fights with my husband in order to get away from him, in order to eat. I didn't realize that at the time until I did the steps and did my fourth step and realized all the stuff that I did, that I ate at life, and I used used food for courage as well. And, I just think about what I did for years and years, and just, yeah, it was very dark, and I passed. Thank you so much, and thank God for God.
Thank you so much, Sherry. Next, we have Michelle F., followed by Karen C. and Trevor K., and then I will take a new lineup. Okay, go ahead, Michelle.
Thank you, and thanks, everybody on the line, for your service. I'm Michelle F. from Central Massachusetts, compulsive overeater and food addict. Sadly, I didn't have any friends to give me remonstrances. Most of my 20s, I married at 22, and my husband and I, eating was one of our activities, and if we weren't eating, we were running or lifting weights. And so, you know, I think about all of the activities that I could have tried or done in my 20s, you know, without kids. And it just makes me shake my head, sadness, because, you know, I worked a crummy job I didn't like, and there were a lot of hours and overtime, and then whatever wasn't spent doing that was spent eating and sleeping it off or working it off. And, you know, certainly I did all the dieting, and my poor husband got yelled at for bringing that stuff in the house and eating it in front of me. And that caused a lot of a lot of arguments between my husband and I. And it was literally a sobering thing when I stepped away from a fight that we had and realized what I was doing in the kitchen. And that every time I got back from Al-Anon, which was to deal with his issues, I would make a big bowl of something and a glass of something. Yeah, or, you know, after a fight, a big bowl of something or a glass of something. That, and failing miserably at Weight Watchers, it was like pretty obviously in my face that my eating was no longer a choice. It was no longer under my control, and it was getting worse. And I was really embarrassed and ashamed about that. And bless him, my husband loved me through all of it, stayed through all of it, and to this day can be very loving and kind, offering to, you know, eat elsewhere or whatever. But I have the neutrality from working the steps in this program, and I can tell him that's okay. You don't have to leave the room to eat whatever you're going to. I'm okay today. I wish I had more insightful things to say. I hope what I shared helped someone. Thank you. I'll pass.
Thank you, Michelle. Next, we have Karen C., followed by Trevor K.
Hi. Thank you so much for doing service, for everyone who's done service today. My name is Karen T., as in thankful, and I live in Louisiana, and I am a grateful, recovered, compulsive eater. So glad to be here. So I have a lot of step one stories, and the one I want to tell today is I had been in OA for 8 years, and I was in terrible relapse, and my excessive eating had taken on greater proportion. And we had this baby, our firstborn son, Charlie, and I had wanted to be a mother all my life. And here I was, I had this beautiful baby boy, and but I was in the food, and I wanted to eat what I wanted to eat when I wanted to eat it. And it was great when he was asleep in his nap, and I remember one day he woke up, and I was just so annoyed that he existed. I just wanted him to go away because I wanted to keep eating. And now I had to deal with this newborn who had needs. And so that's the kind of selfish, self-centered place that being in the food can get me to. And my husband asked me if I would just promise not to eat his food. He had some food in the house that was my husband's, for sure. And so he asked me if I could just promise not to eat his food, because we were talking about how the fact that I was out of control of my food. And I could not promise my husband, because when that rage to eat overcame me each day, or not even each day, whenever it overcame me, I couldn't promise that I would not steal from my husband. And that was part of my bottom that time. That was a long time ago. Now that son is 26. And I have been abstinent now, thank you, by the grace of God, for many years. And to give hope to the newcomer, I just, food has taken on a normal place in my life. I am not consumed with food anymore. It's not all I can think about. It's amazing. I feel like I've been placed in a zone of neutrality, safe and protected. I just eat what I'm supposed to eat when I'm supposed to eat it. And the self-pity is gone. I no longer have self-pity that there's certain foods that are like alcohol to me that I just can't eat. I'm allergic to them. And the self-pity
is gone.
Just how I eat. Thank you so much. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Karen. Next, we have Trevor Kay. And then I will take a new lineup. I'll just let you know what we were reading in case you came on late. We were on page 3, the second paragraph, My Drinking Assumed More Serious Proportions. And we're reading just that one paragraph. So go ahead, Trevor, and then I'll take another lineup. Thank you so much.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Trevor K. This is like my fifth or sixth meeting, and the thing in the reading that makes that got my attention or stood out was becoming a lone wolf, and for me, and then remonstrances of friends. I felt this way, I think, yesterday at work. Well, I just seemed to piss everybody off. And my eating assuming, you know, different proportions or whatever. I called my sponsor from another program after what happened at work yesterday, and he helped me make the choice to go pay more than I wanted to pay to buy like a healthy meal instead of something junky. And I still ate past the point of full and to where it really hurt. And that's where I'm at these days. I've cut all kinds of, you know, sweets and all kinds of stuff out for a bit now, with almost 100, not perfectly. I took a trip where I ate a couple things, but that was pretty isolated. So now I'm eating all this, like, boring food, even though I used to like eating healthy food. And now I've been eating the healthy food, like, too much. Or, as was mentioned earlier, like, to where then my mom, who I live with my mom, will be like, hey, do you want to eat such and such, you know, dinner or whatever? And I will have eaten, you know, an hour before or something, and I tell her, no, I'm not hungry. I think it sucked for her because she's like, oh, all right, well, I guess we won't have dinner together or something like that. And that's where I'm at with this. I don't know what to do. And that's it.
Gentle reminder.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Trevor. And just to mention again, at the end of the meeting, we will have a newcomer greeter who will take the names and numbers of newcomers, and there will be lots of wonderful fellowship, people calling and connecting with you. So if you're new and you've never given your name before, please stay on till the end of the meeting. Okay, let's go ahead. I'm going to take another lineup of people that would like to share. Remember that it must be or should be linked directly to what we read in the big book today, and I'm ready.
This is
Richard M.
from Portland.
Elaine C.
Rachel P. All right, in between Richard M. and Elaine C., I heard someone.
Gail K.
Gail K. So I have so far Richard M., Gail K., and Elaine C. Richard K., yes. Okay, I can take another few names.
Rachel P.
Jordan L.
Okay, let's
That's Elaine T.
Yes, I have you, Elaine. Jordan L. Okay. I have Richard M., Gail K., Elaine C., Rachel P., and Jordan L. Go ahead, Richard, unmute and share with us.
Hi, this is Richard M. from Toronto, Canada. Can I be heard?
Yes.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for hosting today. This passage, part of Bill's story, is one of I love Bill's story. You know, it really shocked me to read the story and the story of his life and the progression in it. And I think there was, when I kind of compare what's happened in my life to the different stages that happened in Bill's story, you know, this is the stage where, you know, the character defect, from looking at my life, and I see this in Bill's story, my character defects of self-reliance, and there's all sorts of dishonesties and other character defects in there. But for me, the self-reliance is what kind of kept on pushing me for such a long time that I couldn't trust anyone or anything to help me cope with the hardest things in life and the most challenging things in life. And the list of things I thought I could trust was very short. I thought I could trust food. I thought I could trust achieving things in work. I thought I could trust if no one else, but I could get out and solve the problem for things. And then as time and time went on, I kept on making the list of things smaller and smaller because, oh, I can't trust that. That thing failed me, right? I stopped trusting friends and I stopped trusting people around me, and I'm just blaming people around me for my problems, for things. And there came to a point where the food was, I thought the food was the last thing I could trust, but I didn't realize that I was using the food to hide from life and to hide from feelings of shame and that I wasn't good enough for things. And it came to a really scary point where the food stopped working, but I was now a slave to it. And still then I thought my self-reliance, I could fix it. And that I didn't think that I could rely on anything else. And again, I kept blaming other things in my life. And I remember I quit my job and thought, now I'll get this under control. I don't have to blame these people and things for taking away my time and energy. And I kept on gaining weight and it kept on getting worse. And for me, I had to get to the point where, and Bill's not there yet, which is really scary reading his story, is if I think we're in the right spot, where he's still a long way away from really being truly hopeless. And for me, I had to have no excuses for quite a while, about a year, you know, where I wasn't working and there was nothing standing in my way for it. But then, and this is the beauty of the program, is that you start to, the food can get better, and now I'm at this stage where I'm not worrying about the food anymore. I thought the food was an impossible problem that I was completely stuck with, and at this stage, I'm spending my time more focused on the spiritual side of the program, which you see will become more focused on later, of making sure that I can trust people, places, and things, but most importantly, trust the power higher than myself to make sure that I can continue to function in the world and have a happy life. So thank you, Rudy. Very happy to be here.
Thank you, Richard. Next up, we have Gail K, followed by Elaine C. And please tell us where you're calling from. Thank you.
Hi, this is Gail K, a compulsive overeater, and I'm calling from Laguna Hills in Southern California. And I identify completely with being an alcoholic, let alone Bill's story. And this particular paragraph is about the story is mostly about how the progression of the disease. And when he's talking about some awarenesses of what he's going through, for me, most of my drinking, my compulsive eating life, the food numbed me. The food put me into literal blackouts. And I was like a zombie. I was in my life and walking through my life and in my marriages, but I was rarely present. My brain fog, as a result of the constant binging, bulimia, restricting, extreme dieting, a fat anorexic, if you want to look at it that way, absolutely impacted every area of my life, and I had no clue. It's only when I was face planted down in the food again and had a white light experience where I finally got it that I couldn't stop on my own and reached out to the incredible lifesaver that this program is and took the steady hand of the many recovered compulsive overeaters that I began the journey home, the journey to recovery. I just completed my fifth step with a recovered sponsor yesterday, and I am just at the beginning of understanding and seeing clearly the wreckage of my past and what the disease and the impact that my behaviors in life had on my life, my part in it. I'm only seeing it through 2020 sober, when I say sober, I mean abstinent eyes. I have 54 days of clean, clear, sober abstinence by the grace of God. And God started with me as the hand of a recovered sponsor. That was the beginning of recovery. I know, the one thing I know today is that I cannot deal with food in any fashion on my own. I need the grace of God, and it begins with the hand of a sponsor. I'm so grateful this program, it is literally saving my life. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Gail. Next up, we have Elaine C., followed by Rachel P., and if we have time, Jordan L. will close us out. So let's go ahead. Elaine C.
Elaine G., by the way. Anyway.
Oh, Elaine G. Sorry, Elaine. Okay.
Yeah. Talking about this paragraph, I'm going over this with my sponsor now. I mean, I just got this new sponsor. The history of my compulsive eating, you know, and the three big things were my marriage. I blame my marriage for my compulsive eating. When my son was taken away from me for 2 years, and I compulsively overate, you know, and my dad dying, you know. When my dad died, I remember the night before I said to God, God, please take my father out of his pain. But I didn't say I want him to die. And I was not in reality that my father was dying, you know. I didn't want to face it. And I just kept on eating all day long until I was sick. And it was terrible, you know. It wasn't until about a year later that I actually started mourning him. Now, having to do with my marriage, I mean, the more he kept on telling me how stupid I am and everything else, yeah, and abusive he was, the more I ate, especially when he went to sleep at night. I sat by the TV and ate all these snacks and all this bad food with all the salt and everything, eating gallons and gallons of, most people know what I'm talking about, and I was lactose intolerant, you know, so I got myself nice and sick. And having to do with being alone with this COVID for the last 11 days in my apartment, I feel like a real lone wolf. I really do. I was looking for a sponsor, and I'm gonna tell you, I don't want the sponsor, the Big Book Solution. So finally, I went to a meeting and I called some people up, and this woman said, "How long have you been in the program?" I said, 8 years. And she says, "Oh, I'm gonna only take newcomers." I says, "I am a newcomer. I don't have any abstinence at all, none whatsoever." And she says, "Well, let's start. Start over." So I was willing to start all over, and I told her I was desperate because being home for 11 days, and my disease really talking to me. Let me tell you, really talking to me, telling me that I could eat anything. This won't hurt. That won't hurt. You know.
So gentle reminder.
Yeah. So I'm at the beginning now. And I could use all the help I could get. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Elaine G. Unfortunately, my math skills failed me, and we are out of time for sharing. So I'm so sorry, Rachel and Jordan. I hope you'll come back tomorrow and share with us. Yes, I'm sorry. Okay. So we'll now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Jody E. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Yes, I will. Thank you, Sharon. Good morning, everyone. This is Jody E., gratefully recovered in California. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.